I like to say these numbers. There's roughly estimated, let's say, 500 million crypto users. And if you combine the you know, the sales of us and our competitors in the hardware wallet market, it's still, let's say, 2% penetration in the whole crypto user base, right? So it's still relatively minority. So we have a long way to go to onboard more people in self-custody.
Hello and welcome to the Bitcoin Talent Co. podcast. My name is Eric Podwaczki, and today we have a very exciting guest for you. But actually, for season two of the podcast, I have my co-founder of Bitcoin Talent Co., Andy Thomas, with me to join the show. So welcome, Andy. And also, our guest today is the CEO of Satoshi Labs. His name is Matei Zak, and we're really excited to talk to him today because I'm sure a lot of you Bitcoiners have been using one of the products they sell called the Trezor. So we'll talk more about the company overall, some more about Trezor and what it's like building a company in the Bitcoin industry. So without further ado, Matei there, can you explain your story before you got into Bitcoin? What were you doing professionally? And then why did you decide to come work in the Bitcoin industry?
Yeah, so maybe I would start by just correcting one little thing. I'm CEO of Trezor, which is one of the companies under the Satoshi Labs umbrella.
No problem at all.
We can definitely talk about it because we actually, as a group, and add new products and services to the market. We actually have a bunch of companies working on certain things, and actually we can talk about it perhaps later. So going back to the question, so my original background is actually music. So I said it's, you know, music performance and then music business. So it's totally not related to tech at all. But I always was actually interested in, you know, like startups and engineering and tech and early on. And I think that's where sort of my professional career like started, let's say. And that was like directed into Bitcoin eventually. I went through, yeah, this sort of, you know, startup rabbit hole, let's put it that way, where I, you know, started right after college, you know, basically company with my buddies. The first one was kind of around live streaming, so it's way before you know, live streaming was kind of an available technology in mobile phones. So it's something we focus on, and basically all around music live streaming. The other company was e-bike sharing in Prague, again, way before there was, you know, like the scooters everywhere. So that's how I got into, I would say, tech in general, you know, again, straight from music performance. And I think it was around, let's say, 2014, maybe, when I got into Bitcoin through, you know, basically my friends in the tech community in Prague. So I took these sort of startup / entrepreneurship courses, and then I would hang out in these communities, and that's where I got introduced to it. Well, now looking from, you know, the sort of Bitcoin almost maxi perspective, I would hate to say I was interested because of like the new fintech back then, but it's exactly what it was for me. I basically said, okay, well, cool, digital money. Well, okay, tell me more. And that's how I got interested. And then later on, I basically, you know, it's pretty boring story in that sense, but basically I applied for a job of a product manager with Trezor. So pretty standard, but also very relevant to what you guys do. And back then, one of the founders of the company, the CEO back then of the company, Marek Palatinus, also called Flush, basically pitched me this, you know, big vision for what is now called Trezor Suite, which was, it's basically the interface of, you know, the desktop and mobile apps for Trezor devices. And it was sort of like a, you know, blank state. We didn't have anything where there was no apps back then. So we, so that was kind of the challenge I liked. So, you know, basically to build new products, software products for Trezor devices. And yeah, and that's how I got like interested, and I fell in love with the company and have been there, you know, since 5 years ago.
I do often find there's a and I'm example of this too. There's a gap some ways between when you first hear Bitcoin, Then when you decide you're going all in on Bitcoin, maybe, you know, financially speaking, and then when you decide you want to work in Bitcoin, those last two are probably, there's a shorter timeline between the two, right? But there does seem to be a break in between. So it was it 2014, I guess, and then 2018 you joined Trezor. So from then to now, I guess what was like the thought process you continued to go through where like, okay, Bitcoin's interesting, maybe I bought a little bit. This is fascinating. I want to work in Bitcoin, right? Like, what was that final aha moment for you?
Yeah, so for me, I think it's exactly what sort of also led me from completely different, like, let's say, education background, you know, music, to going to tech and this. So I was really interested in stuff I didn't understand. So that's, I think, what led me to Bitcoin in general.
Yeah.
Well, I was like, okay, this is cool, but I have no idea how it works and why should I even care? And I think that's where I saw, you know, basically all my kind of, and by the way, I also left back in school, like I left econ, like economics, sociology, psychology, and I know all those subjects. And I think that's connected pretty well with Bitcoin, you know, then connecting me through the tech into actually my career, or let's say my future job. And that's, I think, how all these dots basically connected together and why I was so sort of lured or passionate about the challenge, right? Because it was a huge challenge for me. It was like so much I had to learn. So that's why I turned it into a job.
Yeah. Maybe side note, we can obviously dive into Trezor, but side note, as a musician, I'm curious your thoughts on this like full circle in some ways with Bitcoin coming back to that, you know, companies like Wavelake, right? Or just thinking of instant settlement of payments or zaps to musicians, like directly connecting with your audiences. I mean, there's a lot of really interesting things I think happening at the cross section of entertainment and social media and community, right? All being built on Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. So it's, just kind of a tangent there, but I'm sure something that you've been thinking through as well.
Yeah, so I think in I would say in general, I mean, when I maybe take this to the to Trezor, like in Trezor as a company in self custody, I think what we are exactly trying to do is kind of to show that it is something for everybody, and that's why also why I love this challenge, because when I started, because I kind of understood from what I was pitched by the founders of the company that it is kind of, you know, still a bit of a geeky product back then, and like 5 years ago, it was on this sort of first mover situation of the company, where we were, as a Trezor, the first company, you know, ever to build the hardware wallet, and you know, we created the BIP39 protocol that now everybody uses basically in the hardware and the software wallet industry. And I think exactly like to the challenge of making Bitcoin work and self-custody for the almost like mainstream or more people, not just let's say the tech savvy ones, was something that I really, really like. Exactly, because I was coming from let's say the non engineering background or something like this. So
yeah, you raise a fascinating point. Actually, there's this was a conversation that came up recently with a group of founders at the startup day in Austin that we were at just last week. This idea of the resilience of Bitcoin founders sometimes being a bit early ahead of the market, if you will, right? So how do you marry like in 2018, you know, what was custody? Like, what was the knowledge? What was the experience with, you know, self-custody solutions, hardware wallets? As you mentioned, you guys created this space, right? So, you know, the public mindset maybe wasn't there yet, but you knew obviously where this was going. We all know today why, you know, self-custody is important, not your keys, not your coin, all that kind of stuff, right? So that's the question, really. I guess, how did you marry the confidence that you had back in 2018 with why this was important, with the fact that maybe the market was a couple years behind where you were.
Right. So interestingly enough, and I would still love to give credit for, you know, the founders, because the way they started basically custodying their own keys was through some, let's say, difficult setup on, you know, some very specialized hardware, right? And they saw that being as a problem. It's like, hey, we got to make it easier. You know, we really have to make sure these keys are offline, but that the users can interact with them quite easily. So actually the usability of self-custody and you know, and private keys and all the stuff was actually the original idea, right? So it was there from the very beginning. It was 10 years ago when the first Trezor devices were built. And obviously, by the way, there was definitely a demand for it, because they did the first order and basically sold it out like super, super quickly. So So, you know, when I joined, I just saw maybe an opportunity to also not only work, well, definitely on the product, because, you know, I was hired as a product manager. So the product development is a big part of it, but also communication, education, you know, and basically showing the masses that it is something they don't have to be afraid of. I mean, as long as it clicks and you understand the some of the concepts, which you basically don't see anywhere else, at least what we can see in the research and when we really speak to completely like the novices coming to the space, it's something we again we want to kind of be able to explain that something the newcomers coming to Bitcoin don't have to be afraid of, don't have to be scared, and it's actually quite especially in our case. It's a quite nice product against, let's say, custody, you know, where you basically just trust some company that they won't steal your Bitcoin or they even have it. You know, we know all these examples of the FTX and all this sure. stuff, but like, yeah. So I think that's sort of the core, what we're trying to do. And again, it's a bit of a challenge to work on, to be honest.
Yeah. I was going to jump in real quick. So I got into Bitcoin around late 2017, early 2018. Trezor was the first custody device I ever bought. I still have multiple of them, which I love. But I'm curious for you, when you first started with the company, can you give an outline of kind of an overview? What was the company like back in 2018? And what was your interview process like back then too?
Interesting. I think we... First, I mean, I came to the job interview after a huge burnout because, like, the last business I worked on, like this e-bike sharing company, it was like a huge, massive fail, to be honest. It was a spectacular fail. I did a lot of mistakes. I learned each lesson. So when I and then I worked for some, like, digital agency. I didn't really like it. The culture was horrible. And then I joined these sort of, you know, like a... how to say, like a very open-minded, super transparent people that are like, you know, smiley and very honest about the way they run things, right? So, and instantly I kind of fell in love with, honestly, like with the founders and the vibe they were giving me, because they were like sort of a bunch of people that were working on really big problem that they really saw already like a kind of a huge traction of like interest, right? Like from the market. Which was interesting coming from like a let's say like a failed startup owner, you know, like I saw these sort of geeks that were so passionate about it and were describing these big problems and the visionary solutions to them. And so I think this whole vibe of the company where was definitely, I was actually the first product manager. Most of the company was just engineers, right? So it was like super heavy on the tech side. The marketing team back then wasn't really, I wouldn't say strong, or it was just like a few people. The company was quite small as well. So I think when I joined, it could have been around 30, 40 people. This year, we will barely have close to 200, just, you know, to put that into perspective. I would say also Wow. We were not really very professional in some ways, because even because I was always trying to be sort of almost like a, like perfectionist in certain things, like the processes and et cetera. And I remember, for example, when I joined, we were using, you know, Telegram as the main communication tool for, you know, between the teams, which really didn't scale very well in the, you know, in the company. So things like this were kind of funny, but the culture, I think we keep the same. I think it just got way more professional over the years. And it's also the part of the question, your question was the interview process. And I think it really was just like, again, the founders describing the big problem. They kind of sold me on what the challenge is. And I think that worked pretty well for me because I got super interested. I was like, wow, I have no idea how to do that. So I'm in, you know, because like that was the big one that I needed.
Well, that's funny. Back even in 2018, that kind of culture that, with a small group of founders, mostly engineers. I see that a lot now with Bitcoin companies in 2024. It's the same kind of style. You get a small group of people thinking outside the box, and they draw in people like yourself as well to help build the company. So I still think that same kind of Builder, Bitcoin, or Ethos still exists, and I think it's stronger than ever. And I think your company is probably one of the first to pioneer it too, which is great.
I'd add as well. I mean, how much of the interview process, or even the assessment, if you will, at that early stage of a company was based on the shared belief in Bitcoin, right? The foundation of what we're building, what we're trying to build for, who we're building for, right? Maybe a question within that is, as a company scales to, goodness, 200 people, as you said, it'll be this year. I mean, do you feel like you ever have to sacrifice the Bitcoin passion or knowledge or experience as you scale?
Yeah, good question. I don't think we sacrifice it because we, I would say, well, mainly the founders are definitely, you know, like the Bitcoin OGs, and they would never let it go. Mm-hmm. And yeah. On the other side, I think because we are a product that supports not only Bitcoin, but crypto as well. And for where I sit, as you know, currency of the company, I really think it's important for, well, for business, I think it's important as well, because a lot of the people coming to, let's say, Bitcoin and crypto, they don't really know. So they see this as a one thing, right? Like, I know we know the difference, yeah. You know, like, because we've been around Bitcoin for long enough to kind of feel the difference, let's say. But all these newcomers, they don't really care based on our research, et cetera. So, and a lot of the users, actually, when we see it as well, is they maybe start with some other non-Bitcoin, you know, basically coins, and then, you know, they become even Bitcoin maxis, right? And we see it from our data as well, that, you know, vast majority of the of usage is coming for Bitcoin. That being said, because that's sort of the company is almost like a reflection of the market as well, I think should be, to reflect, of course, the needs and demand of the market. We also have people, you know, super passionate about Ethereum and basically crypto and, let's say, other technologies, networks, et cetera. And I think it's totally healthy for the culture of the company. Basically, like, the plurality of opinion and expertise and passion, I think it's like super important for, you know, to have these healthy discussions, to be able to do product that is not Bitcoin only, right? So it's quite important. So that's why I sort of want to promote this plurality of opinion and almost this like free market maximalism. So if there is some demand for certain things that still reside within the, say, boundaries of our values, morals of you know, of what Bitcoin does, then we are still okay to do that and support people, you know, being passionate about it.
I do wonder, and I just, excuse me, I think of my own journey coming into Bitcoin and, you know, not ashamed to say, messing around in other areas of the broader crypto landscape before really, you know, getting anchored in Bitcoin only, right? So I'm not sure if this is even a stat or a metric you can see, but how many people come in with, let's say, diversified holdings across their treasures that migrate more and more towards 100% Bitcoin, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sure you see that to some degree, though. So it's good. I guess the point to make there is, yeah, offering a product for the broader market, building it as a Bitcoiner. I mean, you're a Bitcoiner. Your team is Bitcoiners. I understand that, right? But building a product for a larger market that ultimately, you know, shepherds people in and teaches them along the way, right? You know, teaches them about the importance of self-custody to start, but then maybe through that, through the educational services that you provide outside of the core product, right? How do you help them to see ultimately that Bitcoin is really, you know, where they should be spending their time, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's why we also spend most of our time on, let's say, the Bitcoin related innovations and products, et cetera. That being said, Trezor is mainly a self-custody device, right? Like a platform where you basically protect your private keys. And those can be from Bitcoin, but other crypto as well. Sure. So that's where, you know, it's kind of core of what we do and the product. But yeah, I agree with what you said. And I think also internally within the company, I can see a lot of people, you know, over the years, basically starting with, as you say, like diversified portfolio and, you know, and then ending up being, you know, Bitcoin only or at least, you know, Bitcoin maxi. So.
Yeah, that's a general trend, I think, among most people like into this space. Start with a diversified portfolio and then slowly gets more concentrated towards Bitcoin, which is funny. And you also mentioned the plurality too of different types of people working within the company. From my experience, I see founders in the Bitcoin space that only want to hire Bitcoiners. And I'm glad you highlighted there's upside to hiring people with different mindsets and viewpoints too, because you don't want to build a company within an echo chamber. I think that you're going to be missing a lot then too. So I'm glad you highlighted that at least, and it's just some food for thought. I want to move on to the next section here. I think it'd be good for the audience to know, maybe just give a high level overview of Satoshi Labs, and then underneath Trezor, how that fits into the picture and what exactly you guys do.
Okay, so Satoshi Labs is the sort of the mother of for companies within which the biggest company is Trezor, which is the hardware wallet maker, the soft custody we are talking about. Then we have Invity, which is basically Bitcoin and crypto onboarding company, kind of the tagline. So those guys are basically providing the add-on services also within what we do in Trezor, and specifically Trezor Suite, which is the app I was talking about, and basically the features such as, you know, exchange, buy, sell, DCA, and all these things. Then we have a company called Vexel, which is basically P2P, peer-to-peer Bitcoin exchange, non-KYC way. So basically, I think we sometimes call it as a, you know, Tinder for Bitcoiners. So basically, you know, can connect with somebody who is either buying or selling, and you can do it in a non-KYC way. And then we have a company, just like a hard tech, it's called Tropic Square. And those guys are creating basically chips, and they try to be basically as open source as possible, and we want to eventually implement some of these, for example, secure elements that they are working on in Trezor devices. The kind of innovation aspect there is that typically all these sort of chip manufacturers are, you know, layered in tons of NDAs, and you really don't know about certain vulnerabilities that these chips might have, which is of course super topical for us as a company. We really need, you know, chips that are sort of bulletproof and can be, you know, hacked. And so these guys are working on solutions that are also open source. So it's something cool and hasn't been really done, or it's not really available on the market, readily available, that we could kind of off shelf just get a chip and open source chip and plug it into Trezor devices.
Interesting. So for all intents and purposes, completely separate organizations, businesses, right. But quite as cliche as it is, synergistic, right? They share a lot of a common mission. They benefit from each other's innovations and work that kind of way, but fully separate, right?
Exactly. So we even sit in the same building, right? So we really regard each other as colleagues, you know, and yeah, the synergies are definitely there. And that's the main kind of point, right? Because that's still Satoshi Labs is, you know, is the founders are the same two guys who started Trezor. So we try to look sort of positive externalities within cooperation of the companies and support each other. And Trezor is, you know, still sort of the strongest player there, the biggest company, and, you know, the one obviously I have the most focus on, you know.
Yeah. So I'm curious. So Trezor is a security hardware company, right? And you mentioned some things like from where you source your chips to using open source. Security is a tough thing, especially in Bitcoin. My question to you right now, what is the biggest security challenge you're facing internally just to continue building out the Trezor devices?
So I would say there's different sort of possible levels of attack, or let's say angles of attack that we could, or our users could potentially face. So obviously, as you say, we are a security company in our DNA. So I would say the most important, well, not the most, because again, like there are different possible attacks, but this is like the great cryptography at the software level is probably where we spend most of our sort of energy, right? So the first Trezor devices that are called Model 1, the device is called Trezor Model 1, has been on the market for 10 years, and yet it's getting continuous updates on the firmware level and the software, let's say when you use Trezor Suite, which is the companion app. So you know, the device is simply it's fairly simple hardware. It's not an iPhone, right? And that's kind of the point, because it's on purpose to build as a single purpose device that is, you know, very simplistic in a way. So it does one thing and one thing very well, and that's basically protecting your private keys. And all the software around it is really, you know, what I would like to say is top-notch in a way, like we look at the security, et cetera. Recently, we also launched Trezor Stage 3, which is basically a new device in the entry-level subcustody market, let's put it this way. And we also added something, already mentioned the secure element, which is like a specific chip that basically protects the device against certain physical attacks. So that means if somebody, stole the device from you and they would try to, laser some shit out of it, it would really make it super hard for them to do that. So, sorry for swearing, I shouldn't.
Okay. Let it rip.
So there is definitely the hardware level protection, but also the software level protection, where you basically every day, that's what most of the company does, or what most of the engineering. So.
Right. Yeah. And what's interesting is Bitcoin's code's always evolving too. So for you guys, you always have different attack vectors to think through. And especially as there's different updates to core or anything else, you got to think through those too. So it's an ever expanding security surface to protect there, which is very interesting. I think you guys will be around for a long time.
Well, I mean, I'd throw in too, it's not just the innovations or advances in the industry. It's just as Bitcoin gets bigger, gets more recognition, becomes more and more of a target, if you will, for evil actors, right? So, I mean, yeah, that's something we all need to be concerned about, right? Yeah, the wrench attacks just for anyone walking down the street, right? So it's for an individual holding at home or a company building, best-in-class security products. Like we've all got to be thinking of these things, right?
Right.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
I want to pivot a little bit. Actually, I had to ask this question, something I've been wondering for a while, but I mean, you've got the whole Satoshi Labs ecosystem, Trezor alone, 200 employees, fantastic innovation you guys have been doing for years and years now. You've got the guys over at BTC Prague, right? I think becoming arguably the biggest, if not one of the biggest, certainly the Bitcoin conferences across the European continent. I think of the Brains team, right? There's a lot going on. So, I mean, what is it about the Bitcoin community in the Czech Republic, more specifically Prague? I mean, what's in the water there? What are your thoughts on why Bitcoin maybe in general is just so popular, and why so many great companies coming from the region?
Yeah, it's a great sort of topic to discuss, because I think it's like a phenomenon around here, right? Like there's so many, as you say, like there's so many sort of successful Bitcoin companies. I think it might be, at least when we discuss it internally with my friends and colleagues from the company, I think it might have something to do with basically the oppression of the communism. Basically when there was like for, sure. for a long time, sort of dictatorship almost. It was simply that way after the Second World War. It was like a long sort of dark time leading up to the 90s when finally we got sort of, revote and all those kind of things and the liberties of the individuals. Yeah. And I think, still, I mean, I was born in 91 after the revolution, but you could definitely like feel it in our families. And when I talked with my grandparents and parents, because most of their lives was actually, in the period. So you could, I think, understand why people, especially on the tech side, would be interested in something like Bitcoin, right? Because when you really don't have the freedom to transact and basically lose other sort of freedoms, why would you? It's I think why would you be interested in basically doing something for the world? So that's one, kind of one side, very practically or very sort of realistically how it happened. Also, because Slush, one of the founders of Trezor, also started the first mining pool in the world back then, and they were mining big portion. Actually, the company before Brains, I think you mentioned. So it's how it got kind of started, and so I think he personally did and also Stig, the other founder, did like a huge sort of service to Bitcoin,
sure,
globally but also locally, because they started these powerful companies that are quite quite big now, like for Czech Republic. I mean, Czech Republic is 10 million people, right? So it's not a huge country. Most people would have probably problems finding it on the map. So, but yeah, so that's something we can really be proud of and for ZR. It's awesome. Yeah.
So if you're a founder listening right now and you're located somewhere else outside of Prague, my question for you, Matej, would be, how can these founders attract talent to wherever they're located if it's not a Bitcoin hub? Because we all know Bitcoin's centralized all over the world, and more and more spots are popping up where Bitcoiners are coming towards to come build. But how can a founder, just attract the talent wherever they're at?
Well, and maybe a quick question to piggyback on that too. It's like, how much of your 200 employees at this point are actually Prague-based? So when you think of like attracting talent broadly, also building a community and ecosystem there in your backyard, but then if and when you have to leverage remote work, I guess, kind of adding to that question.
Right. So we definitely have more and more people being fully remote. It's a trend they can see us. I think that's the only good thing COVID left us, this whole strategy of the pandemic. Left us at least with sort of the new standard of it's okay to work from somewhere else and you can still be efficient and sure. be massively productive and successful within the company. One of our C-level managers is actually fully based in not in Prague, basically, right? So and it works, I don't see any issues. We basically, especially Europe is quite small, so you can like travel around Europe, especially when you're in a similar time zone, right? Like, I think that's the only challenge. I think the time zone might be a challenge, but we, by the way, have a great designer based in the Bay Area as well. And again, it's no complaints. It works very nice and we're super happy with him. I hope he's happy with us as well. And I think he's, so I think, there are some, coming back to the question, I think it's also definitely important to do something for the engagement as well and make sure that people, are exactly like happy and working towards the, important mission. But I think it's exactly the second part of the question, and it's the mission that you are working on. Because once you have some, people mm-hmm. passionate about some common goal or, that being Bitcoin and or some, let's say, challenge around Bitcoin adoption, Bitcoin security, whatever it is, I mean, you all of a sudden have friends, right? Like all of a sudden have topic to talk about. You have something in common, right? So, which is maybe stronger than just watching football or something. Or I don't mean to undermine football fans, but like, Bitcoin has, it has such a deeper connection to, as I mentioned, psychology, maybe sociology, economics, tech, and et cetera. So, mm-hmm. Bitcoiners, I think they tend to understand each other's, passion for certain problems in the world. I think remote is definitely welcome in interesting, and I would recommend everybody, to be super open-minded about this. And I think people are more and more. It's cool. It works.
I would echo that, by the way. I mean, we have talked to companies of all shapes and sizes, different types of founders, thoughts, opinions, all that. But generally, those who have opted to focus on remote hiring, sounds like an obvious statement, but of course they're better positioned to win the talent war, if you will. You're getting the best people no matter where they may live, right? There's benefits, from a cost standpoint, depending on where you're hiring, but it also just helps you, accomplish and move forward on your goals faster.
Exactly. And maybe I can second that in a way that there are certain roles within Trezor that I don't think we don't need any prior Bitcoin experience, let's say, right? Like, if you have certain roles where you simply don't need it, and maybe we as a company are willing to invest in those roles and those specific individuals to onboard them and to basically orange pill them, and that's cool. But there are certain roles where it's complete must-have, obviously, right? Like when we talk especially about security, for example, and or product, because then you really need people to understand what they are doing. So there are certain roles that are absolute must-have. And again, coming back to our specific scenario where, there are a lot of Bitcoin companies per capita in Czech Republic, but still, I mean, the talent pool is not unlimited, right? So that's why we increasingly look for talent outside of Czech Republic, especially when it comes to, Bitcoin or let's say some specific crypto roles, because those people we simply cannot find in the local market.
Yeah, I guess related too. So in regards to attracting talent, What's Trezor's general hiring strategy? And then from there, we can maybe go into some nitty gritty, like what's your interview process like, who does the interviews, who makes the final decisions, but just a high level overview. Yeah, what's the general hiring strategy right now?
So it depends where, I mean, let's say we probably, my guess would be opened 20 open positions, right? So we track certain metrics such as time to hire, that's definitely important in general, maybe as a strategic part. We definitely want people that are passionate about jobs. I know it sounds maybe super lame, like very obvious thing, but at least all the interviews I've been in, of course, over the years, I've hired a lot of people. I think the passion is like number one, because the passion trumps a lot of other, let's say, deficiencies or something that the person would learn, right? Like it's not a problem. Like I'm a huge believer in education in general, and I think I would even say it's better to hire somebody who's like perhaps less senior, but are super passionate about what they want to do and really looking forward to, you know, wake up in the morning and do this, you know, Bitcoin thing, as opposed to maybe somebody who's more senior but are not really that, let's say, passionate about the job. So in general, like those things we really look at, and I think it's been paying off quite nicely, because really like the company culture, yeah, it's great, in the passion I can see that, right? Like it's amazing. Like we have so many people that would work on, you know, either improving Bitcoin in some way or its adoption, or would simply be, you know, like Bitcoin maxis or whatever. But like, yeah, they would do that even if you didn't pay them. That's what I'm trying to say, right? Like these people would still be interested in it, and I think that's that's like super important to see in the candidates.
Yeah, I completely agree. And that's honestly, for a lot of our first round interviews, very first thing I like to get through is, are you passionate or not? And from there, we decide whether next round. So I guess for your interview process, do you have a specific question you like to ask people to bring out that, to see if they're actually passionate or not? Or is it just something you figure out along the interview process?
Yeah, so when it comes to, I talk to everybody we hire, basically. I take the last round where I let the teams, you know, work on, let's say, the expertise and the professional capacity of those individual candidates. But they always still have to talk to everybody. And I actually said, like, I put a stop to certain suggestions where I didn't really see the spark in the eyes, where I, you know, asked certain questions about the job. I didn't see it. I think my one little advantage of like from this position is that in my career, I've done a lot of things, like from like marketing, product, you know, growth, and some specific roles. And obviously I've worked a great deal of time with engineers. So I think I kind of, you know, understand. I'm a generalist, so I know a lot of. I don't go deeper in certain topics, but maybe the product management is the only thing. But like, the rest is, I can sort of, you know, follow certain trends and et cetera. And that gives me the leverage maybe to connect with the people on a certain level and then ask certain questions. But those things that I always ask are, again, maybe lame, but like, I always want to know why. Ask why Trezor? Why do people want to work for Trezor? Why they want to work, for Bitcoin company or crypto company? And what is the next role that they see themselves at? Because I also like to see not only the passion, but also the ambition. So I'm looking for them to give away either that they are, yeah, okay, whatever, like 9 to 5, or that they are like, yeah, no, I want to learn this thing and I want to do that thing after that. And maybe I could do that as well. You know, because again, these people tend to have this like a very nice positive snowball effect where they tend to fix women like more problems in the company and more take on more challenges than you would normally expect them to, right? And that's, I think those are one of the best hires where I didn't even know what they are going to do, but they sort of constantly exceed expectations, right? And I think it's amazing, because those are really sort of these like huge boost motivators in the company, And it's even a good investment, you know, from the point of the company as well, like from the financials. It's like these company, these people really do a tremendous amount of work, and we of course reward them for it as well. But like, I think it's great for their careers as well. But I think those are, you know, the good sort of matches that we are looking for.
Yeah, I'm actually thrilled to hear you say that. This topic, it's been really big in the broader, not even just in Bitcoin, but the broader talent community, just my you know, peers and colleagues, things like that. Mm-hmm. This idea of the CEO having, I don't say final say, but the CEO participating certainly in every process and being at that final round. Of course that makes sense. There is no keeper of culture. There is no maintainer of the bar of quality like a CEO, right? And that's not to say anything against a direct hiring manager or anyone else within the organization, but that's the CEO's chief responsibility, right? These issues compound as you scale too, right? Implicit bias, whether it's a hiring manager looking at a role as a critical need to fill a spot, you know, just focused on what exactly his or her need is with that role. That's not wrong of that hiring manager, but it doesn't take the bigger picture into mind in terms of how this is affecting the business overall, how we're maintaining a certain culture and attitude and just everything in the business. So I just have to say, I love hearing you say that. I think it should be a no-brainer that a CEO should participate in every interview process, right? And that's not to say it's taking anything away from the decision-making abilities of a hiring manager.
Exactly.
It's only additive to the business and making sure that we really are kind of rowing in the same direction.
Yeah, exactly. I totally agree. And I also think it's not about like micromanaging anybody. It's more about also understanding exactly like the culture inputs that are, you know, going into the company. And I think as we grow as a company, it's you know, as you mentioned, it's a sort of a risk that you have to check for as well, because you don't want to break the culture, right? Like you exactly want this like passion, ambition, and those things I mentioned. So yeah, totally agree.
Yeah. You should leave room for an evolving culture, a culture that can still function with 200 plus inputs, right? But still maintaining some of that initial spark, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. We only have a couple minutes left here, so a few more questions for you. I want to go back to, you mentioned you have about 20 or so open roles right now. Of those open roles, can you pick one that's maybe most urgent for you and just give a high-level overview of what the role is and what type of person you're looking for is? Because we have a lot of listeners looking to work in the industry, and I think it would be good for just the audience to hear what's available.
Yeah, so very topical for me, again, coming from... Actually, I was, prior to becoming CEO, I was a CPO, so Chief Product Officer, and we still, I think, are missing... sort of like a strong product leader in the company that will help me to manage certain things. So I think that's one of the more urgent ones. And also, I can imagine very difficult to find one, because it's we need somebody who's like very senior for sure, and specifically with us as you know, Trezor, the hardware company, but also the software company. We ideally look for somebody again who's like Bitcoin native or crypto native, ideally both, but also understand software and hardware product making. I was coming from the software side of things, and I was kind of thinking, well, I could, you know, catch up on the hardware things quite fast. I mean, I can learn fast, etc. And as I said, I believe in education, I could do that. And I think I was pretty I was wrong to. On my own sort of estimations, how you know, sort of how challenging it is to do hardware as a company. I mean, there is this famous saying, hardware is hard, but boy, it's like it's really hard, because like to connect it with you know, the scale that we, because we really are talking about millions of devices that we ship basically globally, and as you guys very well know, you know, the spikes in Bitcoin and certain volatility in Bitcoin brings a huge demand for our products. And then, you know, the bear market comes and then this demand is no longer there. So to build, because like the lead times for the material and even the innovation process, you know, it takes you basically years before you are able to put a product on the market. As opposed to software, well, you know, you can ship a feature within a week. And that doesn't happen in the hardware. You have to be super sure that the strategy is right. sourcing is right, the manufacturing process is right, you have the right partners, the suppliers are right, all those things. So there was somebody who would understand these complexities and would be, you know, great product manager, product leader. That's something we are looking for right now.
Much less iteration in a hardware environment, right? Post-launch, at least.
Sorry, what was that?
So much less iteration, certainly post-launch in a hardware environment.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Well, and by the way, we still have to do certain iterations, but yeah, they are painful because they really are. Because, for example, you have to sometimes change some small process in the manufacturing because maybe the yield is not that great, and maybe there's some, you know, fault rates of certain processes. You know, maybe it's expensive because, again, at the scale, even a couple cents more, you know, like, it's a huge chunk of money at the end. So yeah, there are certain iterations, but they are way more painful than in software.
Yeah. And then maybe just one last thing to leave everyone with here. So you're thinking of your 5 years, you know, then to now, starting as the first PM to now CEO, everything you've seen in the company, but also in Bitcoin broadly, looking forward for the next 5 years, as we enter this next epoch, as we enter, I mean, goodness, yeah, all these themes of institutions coming, of ETFs being launched. I mean, it's just, it's a different world now, obviously, than when you first joined Trezor, right? So where do you see the company in the next 5 years? What things are going to be, you know, kind of top of mind for you guys through that period?
Yeah, so as you say, a lot of things happened and has been happening. I still think, I like to say these numbers, there's roughly estimated, let's say, 500 million crypto users. And if you combine the you know, the sales of us and our competitors in the hardware wallet market, it's still, let's say, 2% penetration in the whole crypto users base, right? So it's still relatively minority. So we have a long way to go to onboard more people in self-custody, which, you know, in our opinion, obviously makes sense and is superior to these ETFs. Changes and all that stuff where basically some third party holds it for you, right? So what we have to do, I think, is to educate more people, onboard them into super easy to use products that are also safe and secure, and the users understand, you know, the concepts basically that we talked about before, and I think we can do it through the means of I mean, I believe in great products, so I think we can do a lot more in product in general. Specifically for us, we'll be launching some, you know, mobile first devices as well. So basically hardware wallets that you can connect with mobile phones as well in the future. So those kind of things that we want to look at. I think we could also go more on the entry level market as well, because I think we could even go more affordable in that sense in the future products. And again, it's all about the scale as well, right? To be able to onboard really millions of users into self-custody. So I think that's the big vision we are working on every day.
Well, I'm blown away by that stat, actually.
Me too.
2% of people who are already in the space, right? Still only 2% self-custody. I'm blown away by that. But that then means a huge opportunity ahead for you guys. I mean, I'm thrilled to see obviously where the company continues to go, and really look forward to to kind of being a watching from the sidelines, if you will, as you guys continue to scale and grow.
Thank you very much, guys, and the same to you. Good luck to you. Cool. I think it's as we discussed, I think it's all, you know, the Bitcoiners need to hear about all these opportunities that you guys are giving them. So I think it's good luck to you.
For that. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Matej. If you just leave the audience real quick, best way to maybe follow you online or get in contact with you and learn more about Trezor too.
Yeah, so Trezor is on all those, you know, social media outlets that you would expect, you know, Twitter or X, and Instagram as well, LinkedIn, but also our website, trezor.io. And for me, it's the same thing. I'm on LinkedIn and Twitter. So that's where people can find me. I'm not a huge on social media.
Okay,
so
great.
you're busy building a 200-person company. It's okay. we appreciate the time today, Matej. Thank you again.
Thanks a lot for having me, guys.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening, and I really hope you found value in this podcast. If you're a job seeker looking to work for a Bitcoin company, or you're a part of a Bitcoin company and need help with finding talent for your team, please head over to our website at www.bitcointalent.co and get in touch with our team. Thanks. Until next time.